Oh, how you doing? Zach Cassidy.
MH100.
Peyton Prince.
Father Jones.
Adam Henry.
TJ Laramie, and you're listening to Windy City Sports.
Yo, what's good? My name is Drake DeMore, and thank you for streaming or downloading this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast. Wind City Sports is Windsor's only local radio sports program and podcast. Our radio show airs every Thursday live at 12:30 p.m. on CJAM 99.1 FM in Windsor and Detroit. New episodes of the podcast featuring raw, uncut interviews with athletes and coaches drop right after the radio program airs every Thursday at 1 p.m. anywhere podcasts are found, including Spotify and iTunes, and on WindCitySports.com. We also have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We'll talk all about that at the end of the show, as we normally do. Today is Thursday, January 10th, 2019, and it is episode 127 of Wind City Sports. It's also our first episode of 2019. And we're starting things off big here on Wind City Sports. Following the release of The Tough Guy, the Bob Probert story documentary, I wanted to reach out to Danny, his wife, to get her on the show and tell some stories about Bob and just kind of talk about that documentary and how it came to be. She politely accepted and invited me over to her home to do this podcast. This is an interesting one for sure. Not only do we talk about hockey, but we also talk about Bob's influence and involvement in some colorful worlds, including the world of professional wrestling in WCW, the World Championship of Wrestling. We also talk about his influence in Windsor and, of course, how this documentary came to be and how you can watch it now if you weren't able to see it at the Walkerville Theater last month. I have to take a moment to thank Danny for allowing me into her home and just comfortably inviting me over to do this podcast. I wasn't really anticipating that, but of course, had to capitalize on the offer. It was such a pleasure to meet her and all her kids, and I'm already looking forward to the Bob Probert ride this summer. So we do talk about that a little bit too. But before we get into the interview this week with Dani Probert, the wife of Bob Probert, we got to take care of one piece of business here that we do every week on Wind City Sports. Our Windsor Lancers Athletes of the Week are back following a Christmas break for OUA and Varsity Athletics. This week, from both our men's and women's hockey teams, it's goaltender Jonathan Reinhart and Molly Jenkins. John made 36 saves in Windsor's 3-0 win over the Laurier Golden Hawks on Saturday, breaking their losing streak. Meanwhile, the women's team split a pair of games over the weekend, winning one in overtime, while Molly Jenkins, the goaltender, rallied up 58 saves and a total of 61 shots. So congratulations to Molly and Jonathan on becoming our Windsor Lancers Athletes of the Week for this week. But now it's time to get right into that interview with Miss Dani Probert. So here we go.
Sitting here at this lovely lakeshore home, probably one of the most, if not famous, hockey wives out there. The mind behind the Bob Probert Memorial Ride, and the person that's carrying out his legacy, Bob's wife, Miss Dani Probert. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you, Drake.
So needless to say, since Bob's passing in 2010, you've really kind of stepped up to the plate to carry out his influence on Windsor and the hockey world and everything. What kind of made you want to do this? Did you ever have a moment where you thought, like, this can't be it? Bob's legacy has to move on past his lifetime?
I think it was more, it was never something that crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. I think it was the people that were approaching me for golf tournaments and you name it. People wanted to get involved in some level. And I just happened to meet up with a great bunch of people through Hotel du Grace Healthcare, mm-hmm. and their interest in putting on a first-class event, along with Unifor 444 Dino Kyoto, promising me that it would be a first-class event and that they would do anything they could in their power to help out. It's happened. It's mm-hmm. been a huge success. And in an honoring Bob that I'm able to do that and continue to do it.
Two down at once, right?
Like, absolutely.
So, again, you don't know the mentality behind some people's motives to do things, so I always kind of like to not really dig into it, but kind of get that backstory where, who knows, maybe you thought like, hey, I got to do something. But like you said, it was just, didn't even have to think about it. You just knew you had to do it, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So obviously he influenced so many people, fans, other players, and just celebrities, as we've seen in the documentary with Mr. T and the Hanson brothers from Slapshot. But I'm sure, you know, like he made a lot of friends that connected with him, but did you ever cross paths with someone with him where you're like, oh my god, so-and-so knows my husband? I can't believe that whoever would know who my husband is. Ever anything like that?
The list is long.
Yeah?
especially living in Chicago and spending a lot of our summers for off-season training out in Malibu, Santa Monica area. We met a lot of great people through his workouts or just the circles, especially hanging out with Chris Chelios. Are you kidding
yeah.
me? Like, so the list is Chicago. Long. Oh my God. So I couldn't even tell you one name that stands out because they're so incredible.
Yeah.
Some of the people that I had an opportunity to meet. And, one does stick out, actually. I'm going to say Chris Farley.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Come on, that's cool.
Because he was so emotional meeting Bob.
Really?
And he couldn't stop hugging me, and he was just such a big teddy bear. What a wonderful guy. And to see this comedian, and he was going through his struggles, mm-hmm. and for him just to be in awe of Bob and just wanting not to leave his side and be with him in the Chicago days, it was, that was an incredible experience.
That's so cool. I think he's a Chicago guy.
Yes.
So that kind of makes sense where when he was playing, Farley was pretty big doing his thing too. So, wow, that's pretty cool. Because I'm a big fan of him too. And I just started to see stuff because he just passed away. The anniversary of his death was a few months ago, a few weeks ago. And they had pictures of him playing hockey as a kid. And I was like, I would never imagine Chris Farley would be a hockey player. But obviously he was a big fan. That's cool. I didn't know if maybe there was someone that you were a fan of. Like, obviously, these other hockey players and actors like Mr. T and Chris Farley are coming up to Bob, but I didn't know if there's anyone, like an actress or someone you're like...
Oh, I don't know, like Simon LeBond from Duran Duran.
There you
absolutely.
Go, there you go, like a girly kind of thing.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Oh, it definitely had its perks. I got to meet a lot of great guys and girls, actresses, singers, you name it, politicians. It was amazing, the people that we got to
It's crazy. It's crazy to, after seeing the documentary, how many people he actually had connected with in such a pretty short life, you know?
No, absolutely.
So I bring this up, the whole, like, celebrity thing, because as we were talking before, my cousin Scott DeMore is a wrestler. I've always been a wrestling fan. And one thing that I found very interesting is that Bob was friends with Ric Flair. Do you know anything about, like, how they linked up or, like, how did this come to be? I find this so crazy how these two bigger-than-life figures were best friends.
Ric was a fan of Bob's and reached out. I know.
Like, come on.
Right? And reached out to Bob and wanted him to come out. And I don't know if you checked it out on YouTube. You could see the little... I have the chairs. I can show you.
Are
the
you
chairs
kidding?
That we have from Sorry. Doing it. And,
I'm going to get to that, but yeah.
Yeah, no, it was quite the experience. And Bob's excitement level was just...
He obviously knew who he was, too,
oh,
right?
Yeah, like, oh, yeah.
It seemed like Bob was kind of a fan of wrestling.
Yeah. Right?
So, he used to have his own podcast, Ric Flair, and he did this whole tribute to him a few years ago, and I can't find it now. Like, the podcast isn't on anymore, but I keep trying to just Google it and find it. He did a whole episode just talking about Bob and, like, telling these stories about partying here and stuff. I just found it unbelievable. Do you remember anything, like, them getting together and being like, oh, boy, or are you kind of staying away from that?
No, I don't really remember much of it, to be honest with you. I remember because of... No, I think the biggest memory I have of that is just Bob's excitement level was mm-hmm. crazy. Like, he just to be involved with the wrestling, to get a call and to hang out with Ric Flair. He was just such a big kid with that stuff. He really was. It was like he'd get starstruck and the silliness.
Yeah, it's in a different world too, right? He's come from hockey. It's probably different to go over there and see those kind of
absolutely
figures, right? So you had mentioned you still have the props and stuff. How did that gig come to be kind of with WCW? Was it because Rick ended up being buddies with him? It was like, come on, we'll do something.
That's how it worked
out.
It was just one, you know, couple dinners, going out, hanging out, couple conversations. One thing led to another, and the next thing you know, Bob's going to like a rehearsal and learning how to, you know,
oh, really?
Crack chairs over people's heads
okay.
and things.
Because that reminds me of, I should have watched it again. This last week I was watching this little like 5-minute clip of Rick and someone else talking about that happening. And I guess, you know, Tank Abbott, did he, like, come back and be like, this Tank Abbott guy, like, what the heck? Or
no,
was
he was
like,
just,
really happy about it?
Yeah, he really was. He was just so excited to be a part of it and to be asked. And he just thought it was great. I think he wished he would have done more. I think that he was to get a little taste of it. And I think he really enjoyed it.
Oh, that would have been amazing to see him as a character, you know? Like, even if he wasn't wrestling all the time, being
that?
A bodyguard on TV or something, right?
Okay, that would have been good. You could have wrote that stuff. Okay.
There's potential there.
Yeah. If Bob were still around, who knows? Maybe Scott would have got his hands on him and planned something out for sure.
Post-retirement too, right? Like, kind of need something to keep you busy and have fun if he likes it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it says, like, he used to come and hang around with those guys a lot at the shows. Was it kind of like if they were in Chicago or Detroit or whatever, he would just kind of weasel his way in the back? Or?
Oh, yeah. There's no weaseling in it. It's just a matter of walking in, and the guys would be happy to see him. He would just be happy to show up and support. He loved that stuff. It was just, which was new to me because I didn't know that he really liked wrestling and everything. I thought it was a.
But like, at the time too, it was very popular. So
yes,
at the 90s, right? So again, I'm listening to all these podcasts with Rick talking about Bob. Like, I just love it when the two worlds collide. You know, like hockey and whatever it might be, especially with the. Colorfulness of wrestling. But he mentioned, I don't know if you'll know anything about this, that Bob was a bodyguard in Vegas making $25,000 a day. Do you know anything about that?
Get out of here. That is so, that's news to me.
That's what I mean. Like, I feel like you know a lot. Yeah, I feel like you know a lot about his life. And like, obviously everyone has things that no one will know when they pass, right? But
right.
It seems like you know a lot, so that's why I think I'm just going to put all these questions. If she doesn't know, she doesn't know. And if she knows, then...
No. No, that's funny. There were a couple interviews of Rick's that I did see, and I thought he might have missed the mark a little bit on some of the information.
Yeah.
But no, I think Bob liked gambling too much to waste his time.
Standing around.
Being a bodyguard. He might have done it, who knows, but not, no.
I'm going to put it past him, but you just don't have any knowledge of it, right?
He liked being at the tables. He preferred being at the tables, yeah.
What do you like to play?
Well...
Anything?
No, it's blackjack for sure. Baccarat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those games.
Cool. That's cool. I guess you would have missed Caesars then, eh? Caesars opened, I think, 2010 also. Casino Wizard.
He wasn't gambling so much in retirement, though.
Yeah. He was kind of... What was he doing? Was he just chilling, having fun around here?
Oh, my gosh. He was into, we had 7 cars, muscle cars, and he was great at, okay, 2 were actually drivable. They were fun. We would bring those out to the Woodward Dream Cruise. Then he loved stripping them down, doing the frame-off restorations. He was so knowledgeable, searching down, hunting down. Everything had to be numbers matching. So I got a 68 Charger for my birthday, so he was working on that. He had a GTO. He had a Monte Carlo that he was making into a convertible. They didn't make convertibles, so he loved that stuff. He was really passionate. And motorcycles.
Yeah, of course.
Complete motorhead. So, I mean, he had our garage at our old house. I mean, my gosh, we had engine stands, engines, the tranny things, all this stuff. I mean, all the parts and the tools and you name it. And he, like I said, he loved researching, loved hunting down those parts and putting a car together. So that's what he was passionate about.
It's a hobby. Right?
It was a great hobby.
Yeah. And I mean, like, watching the documentary, you mentioned, like, he was a big kid a lot. And then when you actually see him doing the car kind of stuff, that's what I thought of. Like, those were kind of his toys. And...
Oh, yeah. And then he was always up in Tobermory working on our cottage as well.
He loved... Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was a hands-on guy. He was very handy that way.
That's good.
He loved it, so yeah.
That's awesome. How did you feel about him on Battle of the Blades?
Oh, that was funny. That was funny. Oh, come on. Yeah, I remember when he got voted off, he was the first one voted off, and he called me up, and he was so upset. I'm like, okay, safe to say you're a figure skater, so that's okay. But he enjoyed it. He had a good time.
Yeah, I can tell. But like when he like kind of signed, like however he got into it, where you're like, really, you're going to do this? Like,
it was Ty Domi. Ty called him up, and Ty was like, I'll do this if you do this, and they both agreed, and... thought it would be a lot of fun, and it was the first time for something like that here in Canada. And well, let's give it a shot. And so he did. And I remember Christine came down. Christina was down, his partner, and staying with us for the month of August, and they were at Tecumseh Arena practicing all the time. Wow. And the first couple of times he kind of went out cocky. He's like, okay, I got this, whatever. And he was out there with his hockey skates on, and then they gave him the toe picks and the actual figure skates. And the next time he went out with those figure skates on, he had full hockey equipment on because he was falling so much, and it was entertaining.
You're just kind of out of your element, right?
Sure.
Like, was that how you seen it? Like, I just can't picture him in that kind of thing. Because, like, even when I go skating, like, if I don't have a stick in my hand, I'm, like, about to fall. You know, did you kind of look at him like he just doesn't look like he's in his...
At first I did. It was funny, and you could tell that he looked... somewhat terrified, really, that he was trying something, like you said, doesn't have a stick in his hands, he's not, you know, hunched over. He's got to stand up straight. There's all the figure skating stuff. But then he was so competitive that then another switch went on. It was like, oh, I'm giving this my all, and I'm going to be good at this, and mm-hmm. my lifts, and my this and that, whatever. So, yeah, he ended up getting right into it. It was funny.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So him and Ty were kind of buddies before that, or did that kind of spark their friendship being on the show together? Obviously, they weren't friends at some point.
No, but that's a thing, though, with them playing against of each course, other, yeah, right? And yeah. that gets built up that way mm-hmm. through the media or whatever.
Yeah, of course, them world. Being actual people, but, like,
right.
they kind of connected before that.
Or yeah, was there's a respect off the yeah. ice, on the ice, there is. It's just once you retire and put that behind you, there's it's a definite family. It's a brotherhood, and seeing these guys support each other and whatever their fundraising efforts are or whatever they're involved in, or I know Bob had to go up. Ty was working on a project, not quite sure what that project was right now, offhand, but they ended up meeting up in Shallow Lake, Ontario. Bob was checking out some motorcycles, and Ty was looking, and they ended up hanging out for a couple of days, and just, you know.
Just kind of hit it off.
Yeah.
They probably realized how similar they actually were.
Oh, like yeah. That, right? Yeah.
I find it interesting that they're both, like, Ty's from Belle River, and Bob was from Windsor, but still, it's such a close connection, and now you guys living out here, him being from here, I just found it kind of cool. Maybe they linked up around here more, but Ty has been mostly in Toronto and stuff,
yes,
right?
But, and New York.
Yeah.
And now spending a lot of time in Montreal.
Yeah, of course.
With Max there, yeah. Absolutely. He'll be in town this week for Montreal's in town, on the 8th? So, yeah.
Oh, awesome. In town. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see him and his boy are, best buddies on Instagram and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they are. They joke around. It's cute, yeah. isn't it?
It's cool. It's pretty cool to have a dad that was a hockey player and then kind of following his footsteps, right? Kind
of. Yeah, even better.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's phenomenal player.
Yeah. A different role, I guess.
Absolutely.
But, like I said, you knew all these famous people and you got to connect with so many people you probably never would imagine you could have met. Seen a lot of that recently in the documentary, but you also seen a lot of his childhood friends, and they actually mentioned that too, that he stuck around here and was friends with all of his friends from Windsor, and just kind of kept his roots, I guess, right?
Yeah, that was incredibly endearing about him, and lovable is the fact that he never forgot where he came from. Home was, it's right here, Windsor, and to come home, I know the first time when he got his paperwork to cross back into Canada legally through all that mm-hmm. Stuff that was going on, the first place he wanted to go to was Harvey's. He missed a Harvey's burger. There was just certain things that he had his favorites, and staying in touch with his schoolhood friends and mm-hmm. Hockey team, old buddies from teammates yeah. from when he was much younger. And a lot of those guys were at our wedding, and he talked to them all the time right up until when he passed.
That's really cool. Because obviously, when he's in Detroit, it's a no-brainer. He's right across the border, right? But even in Chicago, it's kind of coming home and doing
stuff
around
here.
It was
tough. It's surprising, though, living in Detroit, and his career was just taking off. I found that he distanced himself a little bit. I think just because he was trying to find his way,
yeah, for sure,
and everything that he was going through over there, and then I think it's a typical thing of someone succeeding or the celebrity end of it. I'm not quite sure that then he kind of started getting leery
yeah.
of who to trust and every. So he really did yeah. stick to his core guys.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm yeah. sure it's very heavy being a popular figure in media, right? Everyone knows who you are,
right?
And, yeah.
Meanwhile, you said about Ty Domi, and I'm like, yeah, thanks to Ty. We had the opportunity of hanging out and meeting Mark Wahlberg. And
okay.
Mark was a huge fan of Bob's and wore, and I have the jersey, I should show it to you, it's upstairs. The jersey that Mark Wahlberg wore in Four Brothers was Bob's.
Yeah.
And it's gray. It's a Red Wing jersey, but it's gray and red. It can't be white and red. It wouldn't show up on the screen. So when I pull this out, people are like, what is this? I'm like, Mark Wahlberg wore this. So,
custom make it for the movie
yeah.
or something? Oh, okay.
But he's a huge fan, so Bob got to hang out with him quite a bit. And
that's cool. I yeah. see him and Ty are always doing stuff together in Toronto for events and stuff.
Yeah.
Say, you mentioned that when he came home and he wanted to go to Harvey's. Was there any, Windsor kind of stuff that he was like, when I go home, I just want to go to whatever?
I know that every time his mom would come out to visit us, she had to bring us, or any Canadians that came to visit us, had to bring us Keen's Hot Mustard, Smarties, Coffee Crisp, Aero Bars, those were a few things that we didn't have, obviously, in the States, so those people would have to bring that to mm-hmm. us. But coming across Oh my gosh, Nick's, I think it is on Dougal or somewhere. There was a submarine place that he had to go there.
The Greek place?
The Greek place.
I think so. Nick the Greek.
Is it Nick the Greek? I don't know. It was a sub place, and he would imitate him with the onions. You want the onions? And he would do this whole thing. That was funny. And of course, Windsor Pizza. Had to have Windsor Pizza. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh. And you know what we missed too is, he missed it, was the Windsor Chinese food. There was a Chinese food place that actually we went to on our first date.
Yeah.
And that was over on Pulitzer. So he liked Windsor Chinese food as
That's
well.
That's cool. It's cool just to keep the roots and to see kind of stuff, right? Sorry, I was going to tell you after, but since it comes up with the Windsor kind of roots, I don't know how often he would frequent aardvarks, but my dad plays in bands. So he always tells me this story. He's playing at the aardvark downtown on Pulitzer, and Bob was there having a good time. He sang with my dad and stuff, and he asked him to play his guitar. My dad said, no, I can't, you know, it's $500 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I guess Bob was standing behind him, and he gave him, like, a little chokehold, like a one arm, and, like, squeezed him. And my dad was like, this might be it. if I know anything, I got to use it now. And I guess he just slapped him in the back, laughed, and came back with a tray of shots.
Okay, that sounds like Bob.
Yeah. So I guess when he went up, he had the tray of shots. Like, I find that funny, like, you know, obviously he had his problems, but he seemed like a guy that would have fun, you know? Instead of the waitress bringing it up, he was probably like, let me do it. I'll carry the tray up there, and gave him all a shot, did a shot with him, and sang a song. I thought that that's a pretty cool story. So
that sounds like Bob. No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Let's talk about the documentary now.
Sure.
How did it come to be for you? Did they present the idea to you? Like the authors that wrote the book? How did it all come to be?
Well, Kirstie Day had co-wrote the book with Bob. Mm-hmm. And early on, after the book came out, we were getting all kinds of phone calls and interest for movies, documentaries, something based on the book, actually loosely based, and we weren't thrilled with that. I certainly was not ready. At that time, it was way too early. Ready.
When did they first present that? Like, right when the book was released?
Oh, within 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right away.
For sure.
And I wasn't ready for that, not to mention the fact that, I mean, we wanted to have some sort of creative, say, involvement in it, in the process itself, and that wasn't happening either. So this just, timing was everything, where it was Kirstie's son, Jordy Day, this was his second or third documentary, and he's getting into the business, and I just felt comfortable knowing there's a connection with his mom there, and I trusted Kirstie, and I was ready for this story to be told on this level. And to even do some of the stuff that we did in the documentary on going on a boat and being out in that area and in Kai's backyard, those were all firsts for me. And it was still too difficult for the kids. The kids wouldn't come on certain parts of it, but it was cathartic. It was something that I needed to do personally for myself. And as long as I'm around, I want to say Bob's name and I want to talk about him and I want to share the stories. I want to continue to honor him in any way I can.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I was pretty surprised too to see the kind of the stuff that was on there. And like you guys said before, the showing, it's very raw. It's really about your family more than anything about him and his life, right? So you would want it to kind of be carried out the way you want it to. You're not just like, yeah, go ahead, make this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I was going to ask was, how did you kind of first feel about it? And because it's pretty more revealing of your life than anything, so did you kind of grow into it and was like, okay, I can kind of open up about more stuff eventually?
That's exactly it, though. I grew into it. I had to wrap my head around it. I think I didn't have a hard time initially, I think, with the planning and in discussions and maybe the excitement of Bob's words being told, his story being told. And I don't know if you've had a chance to read the book. No. It basically, the timeline is exactly that with the documentary. But then as I saw the first, the rough cut version, that was in September, the reality of it hit. I'm like, whoa, this is raw. It's dark. It's completely honest. I think it was sad for me that there was so much missing. The good stuff was missing.
Yeah.
It's a highlight reel of the crap years. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's all well documented. There's no secrets that are revealed. Yeah. I mean, this is stuff that those are news clips and things that were already out there. But then the more time that I had to even wrap my head around that part, it was the, no, I, the kids and I, the family and friends that knew Bob well, we know the good stuff. Yeah. We know the truth, and we know what's missing from the documentary, and that's okay. We're going to keep that ours.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing to do too, right?
Right.
And it, like you said, it's very raw, right down to the point. It kind of details all the negatives, but you also kind of get to tell it in your side of the story too, like what was going on. Like, he's not a bad guy, you know. He might have been getting in trouble, but he comes home and he's an awesome dad and stuff, right? So that was the stuff that really kind of was highlighted to me. Someone asked me, like, what did you learn about Bob in the documentary? And I was like, nothing. Like, you know, I already knew all this stuff had happened. It was more into detail about how it was perceived at the time. So for me, it's awesome, because in 99 I was 6 years old, you know. I don't know what's happening.
Well, gee, thanks for that, Drake. Yeah.
I'm not trying to make you feel old, but, like, you know, to be able to see that aspect, like an adult aspect of it now, is fantastic. So one thing that also stood out to me was that it seemed like he kind of kept hockey away from his home life, like, you know, the politics and the BS of it. But I feel like everyone comes home and vents about their job. You know, I go home and be like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened, whatever. Did he ever do stuff like that, or was it just, like, completely separate?
I love your insight at all of that right there. Thank you for sharing that. I love hearing people's take on the documentary. And yes, you're right, with the whole, the hockey world, his job, there were certain times where he would talk about it. How can you not?
Yeah,
that's your life. And there were certain things, but he didn't, and I've said this before, he didn't live and breathe it. There were some hockey families that you saw that's what they did, and that's how they lived, and that was their life, and that wasn't ours. It was just when it was game day, and it was, you know, or training camp, or the end of the season, there was just certain times, yeah, we lived and breathed it. That was our lives. But for him to, like, drive home from the United Center, it was about a 15-minute drive home from the rink to our house, and that was when he would vent after a game, or, you know, maybe bitch about ice time or a bad play or something he did, whatever. And the minute we got home, it was done. Okay, let's get ready for the next game. And that's, I love that about
it. Yeah, that's a great mentality to have and stuff, you know. Just, it wasn't really detailed in the documentary. It said, like, you know, he came home, he wanted to be dad. When he was at the rink, he wanted to be Bob. But again, he's a human being, right? So of course it's gonna come up and stuff, but
we were fortunate. There wasn't a whole lot of threats with him being traded, and he was put on waivers near the end of his career. That was a tough time. So, you know, you have agents calling and things are going on, the hustle and bustle around the house and all that stuff going on. But that didn't happen a lot he was very fortunate. He had a great career. Mm-hmm. So other than that, to talk about games and preparing for a game, there was only one game that he ever prepared for that I saw. And that was the rematch with Ty Domi, because of the hype and the involvement of that craziness in the media. But and I think he was genuinely nervous. I think he really was wanting to make sure that he was ready for this when he was prepared.
Yeah.
But that was one game. That was out of how many games that I was with him for. It was like, no, it wasn't bad at all.
Yeah, and for a guy that probably wasn't always or never nervous, you know, or at least didn't show it.
He never was. He never lost sleep, or not that I would know of. And it was funny, I think it was Ice Guardians or, I'm trying to think of the other one.
Where he was in it?
Yeah.
I've been trying to find it with Chris Nyland. Mm-hmm. I've seen a clip of him talking, but I haven't been able to find it. I forget what it's like, Enforcers or something like that.
Yeah, no,
the Ice Guardians one is fantastic.
Oh, the Ice Guardians one is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But the one with Knuckles is good too, with Chris Nyland. Last Gladiator.
That's it, yeah. I've been trying to find that.
Last Gladiator. Yeah. I have that somewhere around here. But hearing Bob say in one of his interviews in that was that he, you know, had lost sleep over a couple, you know, toss and turn a little bit. I'm like, wow. Well, he kept that away from me really good, because, yeah, I never saw signs of that. He'd get quiet on game days, but that'd be the extent of it.
Mm-hmm. That was normal.
Right, it was.
So, like, obviously, we know a lot about Bob and his life to this day. Did any other hockey wives ever reach out to you, knowing the situations you guys have been through, for kind of just advice or anything like that?
Other players, wives, and their wives going through similar situations.
Yeah, have reached out to you and been like, how did you deal with it? Whatever the question might be, did anyone ever kind of reach out to you for
advice?
Oh, yeah. You don't have to say who.
No, but I'm just saying in general, it's amazing the people, even with the documentary coming out, the people that have been reaching out and...
Well, now you're actually seeing...
Right, stuff, and right? sharing their stories and asking. And there was a couple of guys that have gone through it and they would talk to me. The guys themselves going through stuff would, I never really gave that much thought, but yeah. And then there were some wives that were going through things. And we were really close-knit family, especially like the girls. We really relied on each other. You're transplanted, most of you, right? When we were in Chicago, we didn't have any family there. And most of the team were the same way. We're not from that area. So you really relied on each other, whether it was having babies at the same time and you know, discussing that, having our little mom groups. And, you know, if our guys were acting like goofs because... Let's face it, they're human, they're men, and they're, you know...
Boys will be boys.
Thank you, and there'll be a lot of stuff that, you know, that's what we really leaned on each other for that.
Yeah, you don't realize that aspect, right? Like, people are all very similar in age, coming from different cities, countries, whatever it might be, and migrating to one place, and kind of living the same life, you know?
Right.
So it's kind of, like you said, to kind of lean on each other is probably very...
And we vital. Did, yeah. That's for sure.
The girls be girls too, though. The girls have fun.
Oh, absolutely. But I chuckle when I think about like how your different phases in life and how I can think of my girls that we all had babies around the same time and, you know, our showers were together. And then there were New Year's Eves that the guys were playing in Chicago the last few years. I'm going to say last 5 years in Bob's with his career there. Chicago didn't have home games on New Year's Eve, which we were used to earlier on, and Detroit, obviously. So our nights were spent at McDonald's in the ball pit and getting kicked out at 6 p.m. because they're closing, going home, and then we'd all have a conference call talking to each other, ringing in the New Year, because that's how it was, and the guys were on the road. So we really did depend on each other for all forms of entertainment, play dates, etc.
I'm sure a lot of people don't get it unless you're actually involved, right? So to kind of wrap it up again, I love that documentary. Never been a Wings fan or anything like that, but I've always been a Probert fan, just, you know, being from here. Oh, and that was unbelievable. Do you know if it's going to be available for everyone to watch, if it's going to be streaming or you can purchase it or anything like that in the future, or is it kind of up in the air right now?
Right now it's on the Super Channel.
Okay.
So people are watching that through whatever cable provider that they have. Yes. I know my mother-in-law got it for the month, so she's been watching it a lot.
Yeah. Well, I just have to do a free trial or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. So she's been doing that. I know that a lot of people have been able to catch it. I know somebody actually leaked it out onto YouTube, and within like not even 24 hours, it already had 5,000 views. And we had to have it taken off because we're trying to get into the U.S. market as well. So I know that Jordy's working on that, and he was in talks before it was even premiered here in Windsor. So right now it's on the Super Channel and it's scheduled to be on Super Channel up until like 2020. So,
so we don't have to rush to get to this.
And then it'll be making its way to the States within the next couple of months from what I told.
Good.
And I'll call you right away or I'll shoot you a text as soon as I hear what's going on, because we were hoping to do something in Detroit and Chicago, something special there as well. So I'll definitely keep you in the loop.
Thank you. It would do so well over there. I know. I see people online just waiting to see this thing.
I feel terrible. I wish I could say, okay, a DVD's out or...
Anyway.
Somehow that you can watch this. I would love for that to happen.
I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. I was like, I want to go home and watch it again. Kind of, you know, like when you...
Were you at the first showing?
Yeah, I was at the first one,
I didn't even see you.
We were sitting down low.
Okay.
Because I thought it was going to sell out, obviously it did. So I just bought two tickets right away. And... just grabbed a spot. Me and my dad went, and Scott and Pat were up top.
Yeah, I put them in the... If I would known.
I texted him, and then he was like, "Yeah, we're here." So I was like, "Okay."
Okay.
And it wasn't that bad. Like, it wasn't like on lockdown there. I was like, "We should just go up and
sit
with them." But whatever. How long did that whole thing take, though? I don't know if I asked you that film the documentary and everything.
Oh, that whole process.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I wanted to ask when you're...
I want to say close to a year. Okay. I'm trying to think of when all the talks started and things started happening and putting information together, gathering all the photos and all the videos and everything. And then I know that Jordy was here for a couple of weeks in June, and he scheduled all the interviews here in the Windsor area, Detroit area, getting all the footage that he could get. That was all around the ride, so near the end of June.
Okay.
And then he had scheduled interviews out in Calgary with... So he kind of line up the players and visit them in Nashville. I mean, there's so many coaches and players and buddies that he interviewed that didn't even make it in the documentary. It just, I found that out after the fact. I was like, wow, he's like, Danny, you wouldn't believe the hours and hours of, you know, interviews that I have that I can't even use. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I want to hear them all. Like, yeah. I want to hear what people have to say. But no, he had that scheduled, trying to meet up with people in Toronto as well and making his rounds. So it was about a year.
Okay. Just like when you were talking, they approached you 6 months after the book had come out and probably not long after he passed away. So obviously they wanted to do it a long time ago. So I didn't know how long it had actually taken to do this thing.
But the people that were approaching and talking mm-hmm. about it, those weren't people that
the,
were...
Not the same people.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Those are other interests. So yes.
Yeah. That's just, again, something I just kind of wanted to dig into. So again, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This was awesome, and I encourage everyone to see that documentary. That's why I was hoping to kind of promote that and put that up there too.
I appreciate that, Drake. Thanks so much.
And there you have it, folks. Miss Dani Probert on Wind City Sports. I'd love to have her back and tell some more stories, maybe get into more detail of some of those things and bring up some more questions. It's always cool to kind of talk outside the box. Like I said, I like when those two worlds blend of hockey and wrestling or anything in wrestling, because it could be quite entertaining. So to see guys like Bob Probert on the WCW television was always really cool. It's good to get some insight on that. And thank you again to Dani for taking the time to do that. But now we're going to get into some local sports news, kicking things off with our Windsor Express. Their three-game winning streak came to an end on Saturday with a 118-116 road loss to the Kitchener-Waterloo Titans in Kitchener in NBL of Canada action. Really close game yet again, losing by just 2 points. Juan Patillo had 35 points and 15 rebounds to lead the Express. Horace Warmley finished with 22 points. Ryan Anderson had 14 points and 11 rebounds, while Chris Jones finished with 14 points. Terrell Jones chipped in with 12 against the Titans. Their next game is tomorrow at the WFCU Center versus the St. John Riptide at 7 p.m. The Windsor Spitfires had quite the start of 2019 this weekend, going 3-0 between Thursday and Sunday. Daniel D'Amico picked up another game-winning goal in overtime on Thursday versus the Sudbury Wolves at home for a 5-4 final. On Friday, the Spits picked up a 5-2 win on the road in Guelph. Cole Perbu put up a hat-trick for the Spits. They wrapped it up on Sunday with a big 7-1 win over the Kitchener Rangers at the WFCU Center. 13 different skaters hit the score sheet on Sunday afternoon, but with 7 different skaters picking up each of Windsor's goals. Tonight, the Spits welcome Flint Firebirds to the WFCU Center. Puck drops at 7 p.m. Two of Flint's 7 wins this season have come from our Spits. But that's not all for the Spits this weekend. They will be on the road in Sault Ste. Marie on Friday and in Saginaw on Saturday. Now to break down some more Lancers news. After closing out 2018 with 7 straight losses, the University of Windsor Lancers men's hockey team made it back-to-back wins in 2019 on Saturday. Bell River's Cody Gagnon scored in overtime to lift the Lancers to a 2-1 win on the road over the Laurier Golden Hawks in OUA men's hockey play. Tomorrow, the men welcome the Lakehead Thunderwolves to the South Windsor Arena for a 7:30 game, and they rematch on Saturday night. The Lancers women's basketball team has now won 3 straight games, while the men's team is riding a 3-game losing streak. The women beat the Laurier Golden Hawks 75-76 on Saturday at the St. Denis Center. Kaya Clark led the Lancers with 18 points and 11 rebounds. The men's team rallied from a 17-point deficit at the half to make things interesting, but fell 88-79 to the Golden Hawks. Both teams will be in Thunder Bay tomorrow taking on the Thunderwolves, and they both rematch on Friday night. The women's hockey team split a pair of games this weekend, as we talked about at the beginning of the show. They played the Toronto Varsity Blues and the Ryerson Rams. They also have a doubleheader this weekend. On Saturday, they host Nipissing at 4 p.m., and Sunday, they welcome the Voyagers at 2 p.m. over at South Windsor Arena. Meanwhile, both volleyball teams will be in Hamilton, taking on McMaster on Saturday. The track and field team has 2 invitational meets in Grand Valley and Ann Arbor tomorrow and Saturday. So it looks like that's going to be all for this week on Wind City Sports. My name is Drake DeMore, and we are here on the podcast every Thursday. New episodes now drop at 1 p.m. following our radio program on CJAM 99.1 FM. 12:30 is our new time slot. Every week we feature interviews with athletes, coaches, and much more from individuals in the city or people who have spent time in the city. You can hear every single episode of Wind City Sports on windcitysports.com or wherever podcasts are found, including iTunes and now Spotify. Search us up on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be, so you can keep up to date with the program, upcoming guests, news announcements, and just some cool stuff that I like to post on our Instagram. We'll be back here on the podcast and on the radio show next week. So until then, smell you later.